This is Audible.
Listening Library presents The Heroes of Olympus, Book 3, The Mark of Athena, by Rick Riordan. Read for you by Joshua Swanson. To Speedy. Strays and wanderers are often sent by the gods. Chapter 1. Annabeth. Until she met the exploding statue, Annabeth thought she was prepared for anything. She'd paced the deck of their flying warship, the Argo II, checking and double-checking the ballistae to make sure they were locked down. She confirmed that the white, "We Come in Peace" flag was flying from the mast. She reviewed the plan with the rest of the crew, and the backup plan, and the backup plan for the backup plan. Most important, she pulled aside their war-crazed chaperone, Coach Gleason Hedge, and encouraged him to take the morning off in his cabin and watch reruns of mixed martial arts championships. The last thing they needed as they flew a magical Greek trireme into a potentially hostile Roman camp was a middle-aged satyr in gym clothes waving a club and yelling, "Die!" Everything seemed to be in order. Even that mysterious chill she'd been feeling since the ship launched had dissipated, at least for now. The warship descended through the clouds, but Annabeth couldn't stop second-guessing herself. What if this was a bad idea? What if the Romans panicked and attacked them on sight? The Argo II definitely did not look friendly. 200 feet long, with a bronze-plated hull, mounted repeating crossbows fore and aft, a flaming metal dragon for a figurehead, and 2 rotating ballistae amidships that could fire explosive bolts powerful enough to blast through concrete. Well, it wasn't the most appropriate ride for a meet-and-greet with the neighbors. Annabeth had tried to give the Romans a heads-up. She'd asked Leo to send one of his special inventions, a holographic scroll, to alert their friends inside the camp. Hopefully the message had gotten through. Leo had wanted to paint a giant message on the bottom of the hall, "What's up?" with a smiley face, but Annabeth vetoed the idea. She wasn't sure the Romans had a sense of humor. Too late to turn back now. The clouds broke around their hall, revealing the gold and green carpet of the Oakland Hills below them. Annabeth gripped one of the bronze shields that lined the starboard rail. Her 3 crewmates took their places. On the stern quarterdeck, Leo rushed around like a madman, checking his gauges and wrestling levers. Most helmsmen would have been satisfied with a pilot's wheel or a tiller. Leo had also installed a keyboard, monitor, aviation controls from a Lear jet, a dubstep soundboard, and motion control sensors from a Nintendo Wii. He could turn the ship by pulling on the throttle, fire weapons by sampling an album, or raise sails by shaking his Wii controllers really fast. Even by demigod standards, Leo was seriously ADHD. Piper paced back and forth between the main mast and the ballistae, practicing her lines.
"Lower your weapons," she murmured. "We just want to talk."
Her charm speak was so powerful, the words flowed over Annabeth, filling her with a desire to drop her dagger and have a nice long chat. For a child of Aphrodite, Piper tried hard to play down her beauty. Today she was dressed in tattered jeans, worn-out sneakers, and a white tank top with pink Hello Kitty designs. Maybe as a joke, though Annabeth could never be sure with Piper. Her choppy brown hair was braided down the right side with an eagle's feather. Then there was Piper's boyfriend, Jason. He stood at the bow on the raised crossbow platform where the Romans could easily spot him. His knuckles were white on the hilt of his golden sword. Otherwise, he looked calm for a guy who was making himself a target. Over his jeans and orange camp half-blood t-shirt, he donned a toga and a purple cloak, symbols of his old rank as praetor. With his wind-ruffled blonde hair and his icy blue eyes, he looked ruggedly handsome and in control, just like a son of Jupiter should. He'd grown up at Camp Jupiter, so hopefully his familiar face would make the Romans hesitant to blow the ship out of the sky. Annabeth tried to hide it, but she still didn't completely trust the guy. He acted too perfect, always following the rules, always doing the honorable thing. He even looked too perfect. In the back of her mind, she had a nagging thought. What if this is a trick and he betrays us? What if we sail into Camp Jupiter and he says, "Hey, Romans, check out these prisoners and this cool ship I brought you"? Annabeth doubted that would happen. Still, she couldn't look at him without getting a bitter taste in her mouth. He'd been part of Hera's forced exchange program to introduce the two camps. Her most annoying majesty, Queen of Olympus, had convinced the other gods that their two sets of children, Roman and Greek, had to combine forces to save the world from the evil goddess Gaia, who was awakening from the earth, and her horrible children, the giants. Without warning, Hera had plucked up Percy Jackson, Annabeth's boyfriend, wiped his memory, and sent him to the Roman camp. In exchange, the Greeks had gotten Jason. None of that was Jason's fault, but every time Annabeth saw him, she remembered how much she missed Percy. Percy, who was somewhere below them right now. Oh, gods, panic welled up inside her. She forced it down. She couldn't afford to get overwhelmed. I'm a child of Athena, she told herself. I have to stick to my plan and not get distracted. She felt it again, that familiar shiver, as if a psychotic snowman had crept up behind her and was breathing down her neck. She turned, but no one was there. Must be her nerves. Even in a world of gods and monsters, Annabeth couldn't believe a new warship would be haunted. The Argo, too, was well protected. The celestial bronze shields along the rail were enchanted to ward off monsters, and their onboard satyr, Coach Hedge, would have sniffed out any intruders. Annabeth wished she could pray to her mother for guidance, but that wasn't possible now. Not after last month, when she'd had that horrible encounter with her mom and gotten the worst present of her life. The cold pressed closer. She thought she heard a faint voice in the wind laughing. Every muscle in her body tensed. Something was about to go terribly wrong. She almost ordered Leo to reverse course. Then in the valley below, horns sounded. The Romans had spotted them. Annabeth thought she knew what to expect. Jason had described Camp Jupiter to her in great detail. Still, she had trouble believing her eyes. Ringed by the Oakland Hills, the valley was at least twice the size of Camp Half-Blood. A small river snaked around one side and curled toward the center like a capital letter G, emptying into a sparkling blue lake. Directly below the ship, nestled at the edge of the lake, the city of New Rome gleamed in the sunlight. She recognized landmarks Jason had told her about. The Hippodrome, the Colosseum, the temples and parks, the neighborhood of Seven Hills with its winding streets, colorful villas, and flowering gardens. She saw evidence of the Romans' recent battle with an army of monsters. The dome was cracked open on a building she guessed was the Senate House. The Forum's broad plaza was pitted with craters. Some fountains and statues were in ruins. Dozens of kids in togas were streaming out of the Senate House to get a better view of the Argo II. More Romans emerged from the shops and cafes, gawking and pointing as the ship descended. About half a mile to the west, where the horns were blowing, a Roman fort stood on a hill. It looked just like the illustrations Annabeth had seen in military history books, with a defensive trench lined with spikes, high walls, and watchtowers armed with scorpion ballistae. Inside, perfect rows of white barracks lined the main road, the Via Principalis. A column of demigods emerged from the gates, their armor and spears glinting as they hurried toward the city. In the midst of their ranks was an actual war elephant. Annabeth wanted to land the Argo II before those troops arrived, but the ground was still several hundred feet below. She scanned the crowd, hoping to catch a glimpse of Percy. Then something behind her went, boom! The explosion almost knocked her overboard. She whirled and found herself eye to eye with an angry statue.
Unacceptable! He shrieked.
Apparently he had exploded into existence right there on the deck. Sulfurous yellow smoke rolled off his shoulders. Cinders popped around his curly hair. From the waist down, he was nothing but a square marble pedestal. From the waist up, he was a muscular human figure in a carved toga.
I will not have weapons inside the Pomerian line,
he announced in a fussy teacher voice.
I certainly will not have Greeks.
Jason shot Annabeth a look that said, I've got this. Terminus, he said. It's me, Jason Grace.
Oh, I remember you, Jason,
Terminus grumbled.
I thought you had better sense than to consort with the enemies of Rome.
But they're not enemies. That's right, Piper jumped in. We just want to talk. If we could...
Ha! Snapped the statue. Don't try that charm. Speak on me, young lady. And put down that dagger before I slap it out of your hands.
Piper glanced at her bronze dagger, which she'd apparently forgotten she was holding.
Okay, but how would you slap it? You don't have any arms.
Impertinence!
There was a sharp pop and a flash of yellow. Piper yelped and dropped the dagger, which was now smoking and sparking.
Lucky for you, I've just been through a battle, Terminus announced. If I were at full strength, I would have blasted this flying monstrosity out of the sky already.
Hold up, Leo stepped forward, wagging his Wii controller. Did you just call my ship a monstrosity? I know you didn't do that.
The idea that Leo might attack the statue with his gaming device was enough to snap Annabeth out of her shock.
Let's all calm down. She raised her hands to show she had no weapons. I take it you're Terminus, the god of boundaries. Jason told me you protect the city of New Rome, right? I'm Annabeth Chase, daughter of...
Oh, I know who you are.
The statue glared at her with its blank white eyes.
A child of Athena. Minerva's Greek form. Scandalous. You Greeks have no sense of decency. We Romans know the proper place for that goddess.
Annabeth clenched her jaw. This statue wasn't making it easy to be diplomatic.
What exactly do you mean, that goddess? And what's so scandalous about...
Right, Jason interrupted.
Anyway, Terminus, we're here on a mission of peace. We'd love permission to land so we can... Impossible!
The god squeaked.
Lay down your weapons and surrender. Leave my city immediately.
Which is it? Leo asked. Surrender or leave?
Both,
Terminus said.
Surrender, then leave. I am slapping your face for asking such a stupid question, you ridiculous boy. Do you feel that?
Wow.
Leo studied Terminus with professional interest.
You're wound up pretty tight. You got any gears in there that need loosening? I could take a look.
He exchanged the Wii controller for a screwdriver from his magic tool belt and tapped the statue's pedestal.
Stop that!
Terminus insisted. Another small explosion made Leo drop his screwdriver.
Weapons are not allowed on Roman soil inside the Pomerian line.
The what?
Piper asked. City limits, Jason translated.
And this entire ship is a weapon, Terminus said. You cannot land.
Down in the valley, the Legion reinforcements were halfway to the city. The crowd in the forum was over 100 strong now. Annabeth scanned the faces and...
Oh, gods.
She saw him. He was walking toward the ship with his arms around two other kids like they were best buddies. A stout boy with a black buzz cut and a girl wearing a Roman cavalry helmet. Percy looked so at ease, so happy. He wore a purple cape just like Jason's, the mark of a praetor. Annabeth's heart did a gymnastics routine.
Leo, stop the ship, she ordered.
What?
You heard me. Keep us right where we are.
Leo pulled out his controller and yanked it upward. All 90 oars froze in place. The ship stopped sinking.
Terminus, Annabeth said. There's no rule against hovering over New Rome, is there?
The statue frowned.
Well, no.
We can keep the ship aloft, Annabeth said. We'll use a rope ladder to reach the forum. That way the ship won't be on Roman soil. Not technically.
The statue seemed to ponder this. Annabeth wondered if he was scratching his chin with imaginary hands.
I like technicalities, he admitted.
Still...
All our weapons will stay aboard the ship, Annabeth promised. I assume the Romans, even those reinforcements marching toward us, will also have to honor your rules inside the Pomerian line if you tell them to?
Of course,
Terminus said.
Do I look like I tolerate rule breakers?
Annabeth, Leo said, you sure this is a good idea?
She closed her fists to keep them from shaking. That cold feeling was still there. It floated just behind her, and now that Terminus was no longer shouting and causing explosions, she thought she could hear the presence laughing, as if it was delighted by the bad choices she was making. But Percy was down there. He was so close, she had to reach him. "It'll be fine," she said. "No one will be armed. We can talk in peace. Terminus will make sure each side obeys the rules." She looked at the marble statue. "Do we have an agreement?" Terminus sniffed.
"I suppose. For now, you may climb down your ladder to New Rome, daughter of Athena. Please try not to destroy my town."
Chapter 2. Annabeth. A sea of hastily assembled demigods parted for Annabeth as she walked through the forum. Some looked tense, some nervous. Some were bandaged from their recent battle with the giants, but no one was armed. No one attacked. Entire families had gathered to see the newcomers. Annabeth saw couples with babies, toddlers clinging to their parents' legs, even some elderly folks in a combination of Roman robes and modern clothes. Were all of them demigods? Annabeth suspected so, though she'd never seen a place like this. At Camp Half-Blood, most demigods were teens. If they survived long enough to graduate from high school, they either stayed on as counselors or left to start lives as best they could in the mortal world. Here, it was an entire multi-generational community. At the far end of the crowd, Annabeth spotted Tyson, the Cyclops, and Percy's hellhound, Mrs. O'Leary, who had been the first scouting party from Camp Half-Blood to reach Camp Jupiter. They looked to be in good spirits. Tyson waved and grinned. He was wearing an SPQR banner, like a giant bib. Some part of Annabeth's mind registered how beautiful the city was. The smells from the bakeries, the gurgling fountains, the flowers blooming in the gardens, and the architecture. Gods, the architecture. Gilded marble columns, dazzling mosaics, monumental arches, and terraced villas. In front of her, the demigods made way for a girl in full Roman armor and a purple cape. Dark hair tumbled across her shoulders. Her eyes were as black as obsidian. Reyna. Jason had described her well. Even without that, Annabeth would have singled her out as the leader. Medals decorated her armor. She carried herself with such confidence the other demigods backed away and averted their gaze. Annabeth recognized something else in her face, too. In the hard set of her mouth and the deliberate way she raised her chin like she was ready to accept any challenge. Reyna was forcing a look of courage while holding back a mixture of hopefulness and worry and fear that she couldn't show in public. Annabeth knew that expression. She saw it every time she looked in a mirror. The two girls considered each other. Annabeth's friends fanned out on either side. The Romans murmured Jason's name, staring at him in awe. Then someone else appeared from the crowd, and Annabeth's vision tunneled. Percy smiled at her, that sarcastic troublemaker smile that had annoyed her for years but eventually had become endearing. His sea-green eyes were as gorgeous as she remembered. His dark hair was swept to one side like he'd just come from a walk on the beach. He looked even better than he had 6 months ago, tanner and taller, leaner and more muscular. Annabeth was too stunned to move. She felt that if she got any closer to him, all the molecules in her body might combust. She'd secretly had a crush on him since they were 12 years old. Last summer, she'd fallen for him hard. They'd been a happy couple for 4 months. And then he'd disappeared. During their separation, something had happened to Annabeth's feelings. They'd grown painfully intense, like she'd been forced to withdraw from a life-saving medication. Now she wasn't sure which was more excruciating, living with that horrible absence, or being with him again. The praetor Reyna straightened. With apparent reluctance, she turned toward Jason.
"Jason Grace, my former colleague."
She spoke the word colleague like it was a dangerous thing.
"I welcome you home. And these, your friends?"
Annabeth didn't mean to, but she surged forward. Percy rushed toward her at the same time. The crowd tensed. Some reached for swords that weren't there. Percy threw his arms around her. They kissed, and for a moment, nothing else mattered.
An asteroid could have hit the planet and wiped out all life, and Annabeth wouldn't have cared. Percy smelled of ocean air. His lips were salty. Seaweed brain, she thought giddily. Percy pulled away and studied her face.
Gods, I never thought.
Annabeth grabbed his wrist and flipped him over her shoulder. He slammed into the stone pavement. Romans cried out. Some surged forward, but Raina shouted, "Hold! Stand down!" Annabeth put her knee on Percy's chest. She pushed her forearm against his throat. She didn't care what the Romans thought. A white-hot lump of anger expanded in her chest, a tumor of worry and bitterness that she'd been carrying around since last autumn. "If you ever leave me again," she said, her eyes stinging, "I swear to all the gods." Percy had the nerve to laugh. Suddenly the lump of heated emotions melted inside Annabeth.
"Consider me warned," Percy said. "I missed you too."
Annabeth rose and helped him to his feet. She wanted to kiss him again so badly, but she managed to restrain herself. Jason cleared his throat.
"So, yeah. It's good to be back."
He introduced Raina to Piper, who looked a little miffed that she hadn't gotten to say the lines she'd been practicing, then to Leo, who grinned and flashed a peace sign.
"And this is Annabeth," Jason said. Normally she doesn't judo flip people."
Raina's eyes sparkled.
"You sure you're not a Roman, Annabeth? Or an Amazon?"
Annabeth didn't know if that was a compliment, but she held out her hand.
"I only attack my boyfriend like that," she promised. "Pleased to meet you."
Raina clasped her hand firmly.
"It seems we have a lot to discuss. Centurions!"
A few of the Roman campers hustled forward, apparently the senior officers. Two kids appeared at Percy's side, the same ones Annabeth had seen him chumming around with earlier. The burly Asian guy with the buzz cut was about 15. He was cute in a sort of oversized, cuddly panda bear way. The girl was younger, maybe 13, with amber eyes and chocolate skin and long, curly hair. Her cavalry helmet was tucked under her arm. Annabeth could tell from their body language that they felt close to Percy. They stood next to him protectively, like they'd already shared many adventures. She fought down a twinge of jealousy. Was it possible, Percy and this girl?
No.
The chemistry between the three of them wasn't like that. Annabeth had spent her whole life learning to read people. It was a survival skill. If she had to guess, she'd say the big Asian guy was the girl's boyfriend, though she suspected they hadn't been together long. There was one thing she didn't understand. What was the girl staring at? She kept frowning in Piper and Leo's direction, like she recognized one of them and the memory was painful. Meanwhile, Raina was giving orders to her officers.
"Tell the Legion to stand down. Dakota, alert the spirits in the kitchen. Tell them to prepare a welcome feast. And Octavian?" "You're letting these intruders into the camp?"
A tall guy with stringy blonde hair elbowed his way forward.
"Raina, the security risks."
"We're not taking them to the camp, Octavian."
Raina flashed him a stern look.
"We'll eat here, in the forum."
"Oh, much better," Octavian grumbled.
He seemed to be the only one who didn't defer to Raina as his superior, despite the fact that he was scrawny and pale, and for some reason had three teddy bears hanging from his belt.
"You want us to relax in the shadow of their worship."
"These are our guests."
Raina clipped off every word.
"We will welcome them, and we will talk to them. As augur, you should burn an offering to thank the gods for bringing Jason back to us safely."
"Good idea," Percy put in. "Go burn your bears, Octavian."
Raina looked like she was trying not to smile.
"You have my orders. Go."
The officers dispersed. Octavian shot Percy a look of absolute loathing. Then he gave Annabeth a suspicious once-over and stalked away. Percy slipped his hand into Annabeth's.
"Don't worry about Octavian," he said. "Most of the Romans are good people, like Frank and Hazel here, and Raina. We'll be fine."
Annabeth felt as if someone had draped a cold washcloth across her neck. She heard that whispering laughter again, as if the presence had followed her from the ship. She looked up at the Argo II. Its massive bronze hull glittered in the sunlight.
Part of her wanted to kidnap Percy right now, climb on board, and get out of here while they still could. She couldn't shake the feeling that something was about to go terribly wrong, and there was no way she would ever risk losing Percy again. "We'll be fine," she repeated, trying to believe it.
"Excellent," Raina said.
She turned to Jason, and Annabeth thought there was a hungry sort of gleam in her eyes.
"Let's talk, and we can have a proper reunion."
Chapter 3. Annabeth. Annabeth wished she had an appetite, because the Romans knew how to eat. Sets of couches and low tables were carted into the forum until it resembled a furniture showroom. Romans lounged in groups of 10 or 20, talking and laughing, while wind spirits, Ori, swirled overhead, bringing an endless assortment of pizzas, sandwiches, chips, cold drinks, and fresh-baked cookies. Drifting through the crowd were purple ghosts, Lares, in togas and legionnaire armor. Around the edges of the feast, satyrs, no, fauns, Annabeth thought, trotted from table to table, panhandling for food and spare change. In the nearby fields, the war elephant frolicked with Mrs. O'Leary, and children played tag around the statues of Terminus that lined the city limits. The whole scene was so familiar, yet so completely alien, that it gave Annabeth vertigo. All she wanted to do was be with Percy, preferably alone. She knew she would have to wait. If their quest was going to succeed, they needed these Romans, which meant getting to know them and building some goodwill. Raina and a few of her officers, including the blonde kid Octavian, freshly back from burning a teddy bear for the gods, sat with Annabeth and her crew. Percy joined them with his two new friends, Frank and Hazel. As a tornado of food platters settled onto the table, Percy leaned over and whispered,
"I want to show you around New Rome, just you and me. The place is incredible."
Annabeth should have felt thrilled. Just you and me was exactly what she wanted. Instead, resentment swelled in her throat. How could Percy talk so enthusiastically about this place? What about Camp Half-Blood? Their camp? Their home?
She tried not to stare at the new marks on Percy's forearm, an SPQR tattoo like Jason's. At Camp Half-Blood, demigods got bead necklaces to commemorate years of training. Here, the Romans burned a tattoo into your flesh, as if to say, "You belong to us. Permanently." She swallowed back some biting comments.
"Okay. Sure." "I've been thinking," he said nervously. "I had this idea."
He stopped as Raina called a toast to friendship. After introductions all around, the Romans and Annabeth's crew began exchanging stories. Jason explained how he'd arrived at Camp Half-Blood without his memory, and how he'd gone on a quest with Piper and Leo to rescue the goddess Hera. Or Juno. Take your pick. She was equally annoying in Greek or Roman. From imprisonment at the Wolf House in Northern California.
"Impossible," Octavian broke in. "That's our most sacred place. If the giants had imprisoned a goddess there..."
"They would have destroyed her," Piper said. "And blamed it on the Greeks, and started a war between the camps. Now be quiet and let Jason finish."
Octavian opened his mouth, but no sound came out. Annabeth really loved Piper's charm speak. She noticed Raina looking back and forth between Jason and Piper. Her brow creased, as if just beginning to realize the two of them were a couple.
"So," Jason continued, "that's how we found out about the Earth goddess Gia. She's still half asleep, but she's the one freeing the monsters from Tartarus and raising the giants. Porphyrion, the big leader dude we fought at the Wolf House, he said he was retreating to the ancient lands, Greece itself. He plans on awakening Gia and destroying the gods by, what did he call it? Pulling up their roots."
Percy nodded thoughtfully.
"Gia's been busy over here, too. We had our own encounter with Queen Dirtface."
Percy recounted his side of the story. He talked about waking up at the Wolf House with no memories except for one name, Annabeth. When she heard that, Annabeth had to try hard not to cry. Percy told them how he'd traveled to Alaska with Frank and Hazel, how they'd defeated the giant Alcyoneus, freed the death god Thanatos, and returned with the lost golden eagle standard of the Roman camp to repel an attack by the giant's army. When Percy had finished, Jason whistled appreciatively.
No wonder they made you praetor.
Octavian snorted.
Which means we now have three praetors. The rules clearly state we can only have two.
On the bright side, Percy said, both Jason and I outrank you, Octavian, so we can both tell you to shut up.
Octavian turned as purple as a Roman T-shirt. Jason gave Percy a fist bump. Even Reyna managed a smile, though her eyes were stormy.
We'll have to figure out the extra praetor problem later, she said. Right now we have more serious issues to deal with.
I'll step aside for Jason, Percy said easily. It's no biggie.
No biggie? Octavian choked. The praetorship of Rome is no biggie?
Percy ignored him and turned to Jason.
You're Thalia Grace's brother, huh? Wow, you guys look nothing alike.
Yeah, I noticed, Jason said. Anyway, thanks for helping my camp while I was gone. You did an awesome job.
Back at you, Percy said.
Annabeth kicked his shin. She hated to interrupt a budding bromance, but Reyna was right. They had serious things to discuss.
We should talk about the Great Prophecy. It sounds like the Romans are aware of it, too.
Reyna nodded.
We call it the Prophecy of Seven. Octavian, you have it committed to memory?
Of course, he said. But Reyna...
Recite it, please. In English, not Latin.
Octavian sighed.
Seven half-bloods shall answer the call. To storm or fire the world must fall.
An oath to keep with a final breath,
Annabeth continued.
And foes bear arms to the doors of death.
Everyone stared at her, except for Leo, who had constructed a pinwheel out of aluminum foil taco wrappers and was sticking it into passing wind spirits. Annabeth wasn't sure why she had blurted out the lines of the prophecy. She just felt compelled. The big kid, Frank, sat forward, staring at her in fascination, as if she'd grown a third eye.
Is it true you're a child of Athena?
Yes, she said, suddenly feeling defensive.
Why is that such a surprise?
Octavian scoffed.
If you're truly a child of the wisdom goddess...
Enough, Reyna snapped. Annabeth is what she says. She's here in peace. Besides,
she gave Annabeth a look of grudging respect.
Percy has spoken highly of you.
The undertones in Reyna's voice took Annabeth a moment to decipher. Percy looked down, suddenly interested in his cheeseburger. Annabeth's face felt hot. Oh, gods. Reyna had tried to make a move on Percy. That explained the tinge of bitterness, maybe even envy in her words. Percy had turned her down for Annabeth. At that moment, Annabeth forgave her ridiculous boyfriend for everything he'd ever done wrong. She wanted to throw her arms around him, but she commanded herself to stay cool.
Thanks, she told Reyna. At any rate, some of the prophecy is becoming clear. Foes bearing arms to the doors of death. That means Romans and Greeks. We have to combine forces to find those doors.
Hazel, the girl with the cavalry helmet and the long curly hair, picked up something next to her plate. It looked like a large ruby, but before Annabeth could be sure, Hazel slipped it into the pocket of her denim shirt.
My brother, Nico, went looking for the doors, she said.
Wait. Annabeth said.
Nico D'Angelo? He's your brother?
Hazel nodded, as if this were obvious. A dozen more questions crowded into Annabeth's head, but it was already spinning like Leo's pinwheel. She decided to let the matter go.
Okay, you were saying?
He disappeared.
Hazel moistened her lips.
I'm afraid. I'm not sure, but I think something's happened to him.
We'll look for him, Percy promised. We have to find the doors of death anyway. Thanatos told us we'd find both answers in Rome, like the original Rome. That's on the way to Greece, right?
Thanatos told you this?
Annabeth tried to wrap her mind around that idea.
The death god?
She'd met many gods. She'd even been to the underworld. But Percy's story about freeing the incarnation of death itself really creeped her out. Percy took a bite of his burger.
Now that death is free, monsters will disintegrate and return to Tartarus again like they used to. But as long as the doors of death are open, they'll just keep coming back.
Piper twisted the feather in her hair.
Like water leaking through a dam, she suggested.
Yeah, Percy smiled. We've got a damn hole.
What?
Piper asked.
Nothing, he said. Inside joke. The point is, we'll have to find the doors and close them before we can head to Greece. It's the only way we'll stand a chance of defeating the giants and making sure they stay defeated.
Raina plucked an apple from a passing fruit tray. She turned it in her fingers, studying the dark red surface.
You propose an expedition to Greece in your warship. You do realize that the ancient lands and the Mare Nostrum are dangerous?
Mary who? Leo asked.
Mare Nostrum, Jason explained. Our sea. It's what the ancient Romans called the Mediterranean. Raina nodded.
The territory that was once the Roman Empire is not only the birthplace of the gods, it's also the ancestral home of the monsters, titans and giants. And worse things, as dangerous as travel is for demigods here in America, there it would be 10 times worse.
You said Alaska would be bad, Percy reminded her.
We survived that.
Raina shook her head. Her fingernails cut little crescents into the apple as she turned it.
Percy, traveling in the Mediterranean is a different level of danger altogether. It's been off limits to Roman demigods for centuries. No hero in his right mind would go there.
Then we're good.
Leo grinned over the top of his pinwheel.
Because we're all crazy, right? Besides, the Argo II is a top-of-the-line warship. She'll get us through.
We'll have to hurry, Jason added. I don't know exactly what the giants are planning, but Gia is growing more conscious all the time. She's invading dreams, appearing in weird places, summoning more and more powerful monsters. We have to stop the giants before they can wake her up fully. Annabeth shuddered. She'd had her own share of nightmares lately.
7 half-bloods must answer the call, she said. It needs to be a mix from both our camps. Jason, Piper, Leo, and me. That's 4.
And me, Percy said, along with Hazel and Frank. That's 7.
What?
Octavian shot to his feet.
We're just supposed to accept that? Without a vote in the Senate? Without a proper debate? Without...
Percy!
Tyson the Cyclops bounded toward them with Mrs. O'Leary at his heels. On the Hellhound's back sat the skinniest harpy Annabeth had ever seen, a sickly-looking girl with stringy red hair, a sackcloth dress, and red feathered wings. Annabeth didn't know where the harpy had come from, but her heart warmed to see Tyson in his tattered flannel and denim with a backward SPQR banner across his chest. She'd had some pretty bad experiences with Cyclopes, but Tyson was a sweetheart. He was also Percy's half-brother. Long story, which made him almost like family. Tyson stopped by their couch and wrung his meaty hands. His big brown eye was full of concern.
Ella is scared, he said.
No more boats,
the harpy muttered to herself, picking furiously at her feathers.
Titanic, Lusitania, Pax, boats are not for harpies.
Leo squinted. He looked at Hazel, who was seated next to him.
Did that chicken girl just compare my ship to the Titanic?
She's not a chicken,
Hazel averted her eyes, as if Leo made her nervous.
Ella's a harpy. She's just a little high-strung.
Ella is pretty,
Tyson said.
And scared. We need to take her away, but she will not go on the ship.
No ships,
Ella repeated. She looked straight at Annabeth.
Bad luck. There she is. Wisdom's daughter walks alone.
Ella, Frank stood suddenly. Maybe it's not the best time.
The mark of Athena burns through Rome,
Ella continued, cupping her hands over her ears and raising her voice.
Twins snuff out the angel's breath, who holds the key to endless death. Giant's bane stands gold and pale, one through pain from a woven jail.
The effect was like someone dropping a flash grenade on the table. Everyone stared at the harpy. No one spoke. Annabeth's heart was pounding. The mark of Athena. She resisted the urge to check her pocket, but she could feel the silver coin growing warmer, the cursed gift from her mother. Follow the mark of Athena. Avenge me. Around them, the sounds of the feast continued, but muted and distant, as if their little cluster of couches had slipped into a quieter dimension. Percy was the first to recover. He stood and took Tyson's arm.
I know, he said with feigned enthusiasm. How about you take Ella to get some fresh air? You and Mrs. O'Leary.
Hold on.
Octavian gripped one of his teddy bears, strangling it with shaking hands, his eyes fixed on Ella.
What was that she said? It sounded like...
Ella reads a lot, Frank blurted out. We found her at a library.
Yes, Hazel said. Probably just something she read in a book. Books,
Ella muttered helpfully.
Ella likes books.
Now that she'd said her piece, the harpy seemed more relaxed. She sat cross-legged on Mrs. O'Leary's back, preening her wings. Annabeth gave Percy a curious glance. Obviously, he and Frank and Hazel were hiding something. Just as obviously, Ella had recited a prophecy that concerned her. Percy's expression said help.
That was a prophecy,
Octavian insisted.
It sounded like a prophecy.
No one answered. Annabeth wasn't exactly sure what was going on, but she understood that Percy was on the verge of big trouble. She forced a laugh. Really, Octavian? Maybe harpies are different here on the Roman side. Ours have just enough intelligence to clean cabins and cook lunches. Do yours usually foretell the future? Do you consult them for your auguries? Her words had the intended effect. The Roman officers laughed nervously. Some sized up Ella, then looked at Octavian and snorted. The idea of a chicken lady issuing prophecies was apparently just as ridiculous to Romans as it was to Greeks. Octavian dropped his teddy bear.
No, but...
She's just spouting lines from some book, Annabeth said. Like Hazel suggested. Besides, we already have a real prophecy to worry about. She turned to Tyson. Percy's right. Why don't you take Ella and Mrs. O'Leary and shadow travel somewhere for a while? Is Ella okay with that?
Large dogs are good, Ella said. Old Yeller, 1957, screenplay by Fred Gibson and William Tunberg.
Annabeth wasn't sure how to take that answer, but Percy smiled like the problem was solved.
Great, Percy said. We'll iris message you guys when we're done and catch up with you later.
The Romans looked at Reyna, waiting for her ruling. Annabeth held her breath. Reyna had an excellent poker face. She studied Ella, but Annabeth couldn't guess what she was thinking. Fine, the praetor said at last.
Go.
Yay!
Tyson went around the couches and gave everyone a big hug, even Octavian, who didn't look happy about it. Then he climbed on Mrs. O'Leary's back with Ella, and the hellhound bounded out of the forum. They dove straight into a shadow on the Senate House wall and disappeared.
Well,
Reyna set down her uneaten apple.
Octavian is right about one thing. We must gain the Senate's approval before we let any of our legionnaires go on a quest. Especially one as dangerous as you're suggesting.
This whole thing smells of treachery,
Octavian grumbled.
That trireme is not a ship of peace.
Come aboard, man, Leo offered. I'll give you a tour. You can steer the boat. And if you're really good, I'll give you a little paper captain's hat to wear.
Octavian's nostrils flared.
How dare you?
It's a good idea, Reyna said. Octavian, go with him. See the ship. We'll convene a Senate meeting in 1 hour.
But...
Octavian stopped. Apparently he could tell from Reyna's expression that further arguing would not be good for his health.
Fine.
Leo got up. He turned to Annabeth and his smile changed. It happened so quickly Annabeth thought she'd imagined it, but just for a moment someone else seemed to be standing in Leo's place, smiling coldly with a cruel light in his eyes. Then Annabeth blinked, and Leo was just regular old Leo again, with his usual impish grin.
Back soon, he promised. This is gonna be epic.
A horrible chill settled over her. As Leo and Octavian headed for the rope ladder, she thought about calling them back. But how could she explain that? tell everyone she was going crazy, seeing things and feeling cold. The wind spirits began clearing the plates. Reyna, Jason said, if you don't mind, I'd like to show Piper around before the Senate meeting. She's never seen New Rome. Reyna's expression hardened. Annabeth wondered how Jason could be so dense. Was it possible he really didn't understand how much Reyna liked him? It was obvious enough to Annabeth. Asking to show his new girlfriend around Reyna's city was rubbing salt in a wound.
Of course, Reyna said coldly.
Percy took Annabeth's hand.
Yeah, me too. I'd like to show Annabeth.
No,
Reyna snapped. Percy knit his eyebrows.
Sorry?
I'd like a few words with Annabeth, Reyna said. Alone, if you don't mind, my fellow praetor. Her tone made it clear she wasn't really asking permission. The chills spread down Annabeth's back. She wondered what Reyna was up to. Maybe the praetor didn't like the idea of two guys who had rejected her giving their girlfriends tours of her city. Or maybe there was something she wanted to say in private. Either way, Annabeth was reluctant to be alone and unarmed with the Roman leader.
Come, daughter of Athena.
Reyna rose from her couch.
Walk with me.
Chapter 4. Annabeth. Annabeth wanted to hate New Rome, but as an aspiring architect, she couldn't help admire the terraced gardens, the fountains and temples, the winding cobblestone streets and gleaming white villas. After the Titan War last summer, she'd gotten her dream job of redesigning the palaces of Mount Olympus. Now, walking through this miniature city, she kept thinking, I should have made a dome like that. I love the way those columns lead into that courtyard. Whoever designed New Rome had clearly poured a lot of time and love into the project.
We have the best architects and builders in the world, Reyna said, as if reading her thoughts. Rome always did, in the ancient times. Many demigods stay on to live here after their time in the Legion. They go to our university. They settle down to raise families. Percy seemed interested in this fact.
Annabeth wondered what that meant. She must have scowled more fiercely than she realized because Reyna laughed.
You're a warrior, all right, the praetor said. You've got fire in your eyes.
Sorry, Annabeth tried to tone down the glare.
Don't be. I'm the daughter of Bellona.
Roman goddess of war? Reyna nodded. She turned and whistled like she was hailing a cab. A moment later, two metal dogs raced toward them. Automaton greyhounds, one silver and one gold. They brushed against Reyna's legs and regarded Annabeth with glistening ruby eyes.
My pets, Reyna explained. Aurum and Argentum. You don't mind if they walk with us?
Again, Annabeth got the feeling it wasn't really a request. She noted that the greyhounds had teeth like steel arrowheads. Maybe weapons weren't allowed inside the city, but Reyna's pets could still tear her to pieces if they chose. Reyna led her to an outdoor cafe where the waiter clearly knew her. He smiled and handed her a to-go cup, then offered one to Annabeth.
Would you like some? Reyna asked. They make wonderful hot chocolate. Not really a Roman drink.
But chocolate is universal, Annabeth said.
Exactly.
It was a warm June afternoon, but Annabeth accepted the cup with thanks. The two of them walked on, Reyna's gold and silver dogs roaming nearby.
In our camp, Reyna said, Athena is Minerva. Are you familiar with how her Roman form is different?
Annabeth hadn't really considered it before. She remembered the way Terminus had called Athena that goddess, as if she were scandalous. Octavian had acted like Annabeth's very existence was an insult. I take it Minerva isn't, quite as respected here? Reyna blew steam from her cup.
We respect Minerva. She's the goddess of crafts and wisdom, but she isn't really a goddess of war, not for Romans. She's also a maiden goddess, like Diana, the one you call Artemis. You won't find any children of Minerva here. The idea that Minerva would have children, frankly, it's a little shocking to us.
Oh. Annabeth felt her face flush. She didn't want to get into the details of Athena's children, how they were born straight from the mind of the goddess just as Athena herself had sprung from the head of Zeus.
Talking about that always made Annabeth feel self-conscious, like she was some sort of freak. People usually asked her whether or not she had a belly button since she had been born magically. Of course she had a belly button. She couldn't explain how. She didn't really want to know. "I understand that you Greeks don't see things the same way," Raina continued. "But Romans take vows of maidenhood very seriously. The Vestal Virgins, for instance, if they broke their vows and fell in love with anyone, they would be buried alive. So the idea that a maiden goddess would have children..."
"Got it." Annabeth's hot chocolate suddenly tasted like dust. No wonder the Romans had been giving her strange looks.
"I'm not supposed to exist, and even if your camp had children of Minerva, they wouldn't be like you," Raina said. "They might be craftsmen, artists, maybe advisors, but not warriors. Not leaders of dangerous quests."
Annabeth started to object that she wasn't the leader of the quest, not officially. But she wondered if her friends on the Argo too would agree. The past few days they had been looking to her for orders. Even Jason, who could have pulled rank as the son of Jupiter, and Coach Hedge, who didn't take orders from anyone.
"There's more."
Raina snapped her fingers and her golden dog, Orum, trotted over. The praetor stroked his ears.
"The harpy, Ella."
"It was a prophecy," she spoke.
"We both know that, don't we?"
Annabeth swallowed. Something about Orum's ruby eyes made her uneasy. She had heard that dogs could smell fear, even detect changes in a human's breathing and heartbeat. She didn't know if that applied to magical metal dogs, but she decided it would be better to tell the truth.
"It sounded like a prophecy," she admitted. "But I've never met Ella before today, and I've never heard those lines exactly."
"I have,"
Raina murmured.
"At least some of them."
A few yards away, the silver dog barked.
A group of children spilled out of a nearby alleyway and gathered around Argentum, petting the dog and laughing, unfazed by its razor-sharp teeth.
"We should move on," Raina said.
They wound their way up the hill. The greyhounds followed, leaving the children behind. Annabeth kept glancing at Raina's face. A vague memory started tugging at her. The way Raina brushed her hair behind her ear. The silver ring she wore with the torch and sword design.
"We've met before," Annabeth ventured.
"You were younger, I think."
Raina gave her a dry smile.
"Very good. Percy didn't remember me. Of course, you spoke mostly with my older sister, Hilla, who is now Queen of the Amazons. She left just this morning, before you arrived. At any rate, when we last met, I was a mere handmaiden in the house of Circe."
Circe.
Annabeth remembered her trip to the island of the sorceress. She'd been 13. Percy and she had washed ashore from the Sea of Monsters. Hilla had welcomed them. She had helped Annabeth get cleaned up and given her a beautiful new dress and a complete makeover. Then Circe had made her sales pitch. If Annabeth stayed on the island, she could have magical training and incredible power. Annabeth had been tempted, maybe just a little, until she realized the place was a trap, and Percy had been turned into a rodent. That last part seemed funny afterward, but at the time, it had been terrifying. As for Raina, she'd been one of the servants who had combed Annabeth's hair.
"You..."
Annabeth said in amazement.
"And Hilla is Queen of the Amazons? How did you two..."
"Long story," Raina said. "But I remember you well. You were brave. I'd never seen anyone refuse Circe's hospitality, much less outwit her. It's no wonder Percy cares for you."
Her voice was wistful. Annabeth thought it might be safer not to respond. They reached the top of the hill, where a terrace overlooked the entire valley.
"This is my favorite spot," Raina said. "The Garden of Bacchus."
Grapevine trellises made a canopy overhead. Bees buzzed through honeysuckle and jasmine, which filled the afternoon air with a dizzying mix of perfumes. In the middle of the terrace stood a statue of Bacchus in a sort of ballet position, wearing nothing but a loincloth, his cheeks puffed out and lips pursed, spouting water into a fountain. Despite her worries, Annabeth almost laughed.
She knew the god in his Greek form, Dionysus, or Mr. D, as they called him back at Camp Half-Blood. Seeing their cranky old camp director immortalized in stone, wearing a diaper and spewing water from his mouth, made her feel a little better. Raina stopped at the edge of the terrace. The view was worth the climb. The whole city spread out below them like a 3D mosaic. To the south, beyond the lake, a cluster of temples perched on a hill. To the north, an aqueduct marched toward the Berkeley Hills. Work crews were repairing a broken section, probably damaged in the recent battle.
"I wanted to hear it from you," Raina said.
Annabeth turned. "Hear what from me?"
"The truth,"
Raina said.
"Convince me that I'm not making a mistake by trusting you. Tell me about yourself. Tell me about Camp Half-Blood. Your friend Piper has sorcery in her words. I spent enough time with Cersei to know charms speak when I hear it. I can't trust what she says. And Jason, well, he has changed. He seems distant. No longer quite Roman."
The hurt in her voice was as sharp as broken glass. Annabeth wondered if she had sounded that way, all the months she'd spent searching for Percy. At least she'd found her boyfriend. Raina had no one. She was responsible for running an entire camp all by herself. Annabeth could sense that Raina wanted Jason to love her. But he had disappeared, only to come back with a new girlfriend. Meanwhile, Percy had risen to praetor, but he had rebuffed Raina too. Now Annabeth had come to take him away. Raina would be left alone again, shouldering a job meant for two people. When Annabeth had arrived at Camp Jupiter, she'd been prepared to negotiate with Raina or even fight her if needed. She hadn't been prepared to feel sorry for her. She kept that feeling hidden. Raina didn't strike her as someone who would appreciate pity. Instead, she told Raina about her own life. She talked about her dad and stepmom and her two stepbrothers in San Francisco and how she had felt like an outsider in her own family. She talked about how she had run away when she was only 7, finding her friends Luke and Thalia and making her way to Camp Half-Blood on Long Island. She described the camp and her years growing up there. She talked about meeting Percy and the adventures they'd had together. Raina was a good listener. Annabeth was tempted to tell her about more recent problems, her fight with her mom, the gift of the silver coin, and the nightmares she'd been having. About an old fear so paralyzing she'd almost decided that she couldn't go on this quest. But she couldn't bring herself to open up quite that much. When Annabeth was done talking, Raina gazed over New Rome. Her metal greyhound sniffed around the garden, snapping at bees in the honeysuckle. Finally, Raina pointed to the cluster of temples on the distant hill.
"The small red building," she said, "there on the northern side. That's the temple of my mother, Bellona."
Raina turned toward Annabeth.
"Unlike your mother, Bellona has no Greek equivalent. She is fully, truly Roman. She's the goddess of protecting the homeland."
Annabeth said nothing. She knew very little about the Roman goddess. She wished she had studied up, but Latin never came as easily to her as Greek. Down below, the hull of Argo II gleamed as it floated over the forum, like some massive bronze party balloon.
"When the Romans go to war," Raina continued, "we first visit the Temple of Bellona. Inside is a symbolic patch of ground that represents enemy soil. We throw a spear into that ground, indicating that we are now at war. You see, Romans have always believed that offense is the best defense. In ancient times, whenever our ancestors felt threatened by their neighbors, they would invade to protect themselves."
"They conquered everyone around them," Annabeth said.
"Carthage, the Gauls, and the Greeks."
Raina let that comment hang.
"My point, Annabeth, is that it isn't Rome's nature to cooperate with other powers. Every time Greek and Roman demigods have met, we fought. Conflicts between our two sides have started some of the most horrible wars in human history, especially civil wars."
"It doesn't have to be that way," Annabeth said.
"We've got to work together or Gia will destroy us both."
"I agree," Raina said.
"But is cooperation possible? What if Juno's plan is flawed? Even goddesses can make mistakes."
Annabeth waited for Raina to get struck by lightning or turned into a peacock. Nothing happened. Unfortunately, Annabeth shared Raina's doubts. Hera did make mistakes.
Annabeth had had nothing but trouble from that overbearing goddess, and she'd never forgive Hera for taking Percy away, even if it was for a noble cause.
"I don't trust the goddess," Annabeth admitted. "But I do trust my friends. This isn't a trick, Raina. We can work together."
Raina finished her cup of chocolate.